You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
All right. Let's see here. If this red light is to be believed, I do mean that it probably means we're live now. Yes. Hey, everyone. Welcome to an exciting new episode of Low Key on the We Are Libertarians Network. All right, your host for this evening, my name is Harry, aka The Moving Target. Tonight's episode should be a fairly fun one. We're discussing Gundam double 080 War in the Pocket, and we're also dealing with Rascal Dreams of Bunny Girl Senpai. Hopefully I said that right. And then Stranger Than Fiction. But, of course, as you know, that I don't fly solo. I always make sure I bring a ring with me. So I bring a chair and Vincent, the chair doesn't want to talk right now. So.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Hello. And you said it almost right. It doesn't. He doesn't dream. That's the whole point. Close. So close.
Well, I'm sorry if I don't get your gigantic, long weeb name done.
That's fair. I completely understand.
Yeah, that's fine. It's fine. So like I said, we'll introduce Reinhold when he gets back to his chair. But we get to see his nice, amazing chair. And oh, look at that!
I was waiting for the right time to just kind of pop up.
As you guys may know, Reinhold hangs out with. I used to hang out with the Henson crew. All right.
I was Fraggle Rock.
Soon to be Twitch mod. Abacabro Reinhold's on that head game down there. Soon to be Twitch mod.
Oh, so good.
Or gear. Yeah, I may like when we really get good on YouTube, I'll probably give that guy a gear. He's getting the gear. Anyways, Reinhold, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, my name's Reinhold. And yes, I did do some work with the Henson Company. So, but that was before we got, you know, that's when they were on SNL and got kicked off because they were too dirty.
Were any of those tapes exist?
Oh, yeah. You can get all the Saturday Night Live stuff. Yeah. You can watch the Saturday Night Live episodes with them doing the really bad, really bad skits.
Really bad. All right. So, it's a cold night here in Indy. By cold, I mean, well, it's under 7 degrees, so it's cold for me. So they pulled me out of the Kotatsu, which I was going to do this whole episode of the Kotatsu, but my daughter refused to leave the Kotatsu if I don't leave the Kotatsu. So we both decided to leave together at the same time, watching each other. No trust. But I was talking to Vincent saying that, hey, I really wanted to go make some coffee to warm myself up. And he goes, why don't you make some tea? And I tell you, because I really only like tea one way. I like it this really complicated way, but I learned how to make it. And it's really, really good when I do it this way is I've got to get a good hot rolling boil on it. First, you know, so since I don't have an electric kettle, I just have things that make hot water or I have to use my stovetop. Now, I do have like a little stovetop kettle, which get there, and so I sit there, wait for it to get hot, and then pour it in my cup, and then I also have to pre-warm the cup, then pour that out, then add the hot water, then add the tea bag, and then, you know, wait the step time to make sure I get some good tea. Other than that, it tastes like awful hot leaf juice, and I can feel Uncle Iroh looking at me going with shame, like, pathetic. So I really only like tea that way. Like, well, I drink tea. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So much so they say, like, you know what I mean? You have other methods to make hot water gels. Well, one, the espresso machine, which is sitting in my office here, which will be moved to the studio once Spangle, dear leader, gets it all set up and actually can be there. So I'll bring the espresso machine, which is a good espresso machine. It actually grinds beans, pushes down into the canister, so you patent it down, and they actually can make, you know, fresh espresso with fresh ground beans. It's a really cool system. It's like an $800 espresso machine. It's really, really nice, and I'm going to bring it to the studio. And then I also, which has a hot water button feature, so you can do some sort of tea off it. It's not really that hot. I think it comes out at 180 degrees. So,
it's not, it's not that hot.
It's not that hot, still McDonald's hot, but and then I've got one of those water coolers things that you put the water on the top and it's got a little hot water on the side. That one only comes out, I think, less than that, is like 165 at the most, I think. So it's hot water, but it's not good for making tea. It's not hot enough to make good tea.
It's not the same.
I've got one of those with a zero water filter container on it, so you put water in there and it does the zero water filtering, which gets rid of everything. I mean, you put a mineral detection in there, you get zeros.
Nice,
that's pretty good.
Nice,
and then it just dispenses it cold or hot, so it's a nice little thing. But I know a lot of people with tea, when it comes to tea, it's more about their ritual than it is about the actual drinking of the tea.
Yeah, see, I don't have the ritual aspect on tea. It's just like if I do it these steps, it tastes good. When it comes to coffee, oh yeah, I'm down for the ritual. I will sit there and do what I need to make good, like a cup of coffee. I will grind beans. I used to grow up with my mother used to make me grind the beans up with the hand crank grinder, grind it up. Yeah,
that's fair.
We used to go to the store and buy the beans and have the grinder grind it up for us and take them home. And then now I just have a Keurig and I just don't care.
What about the planet, Reinhold?
You get one of those. So you get one that's renewable. So what you do is you get this coffee like you do before with the grinding and everything else. You still do that. They make these K-cups that you open up and you can put your coffee into it and use it. And then when you're done, you pull it out and put another one in and do that. You can do it with tea, too. You can put tea in there and use the Keurig for the tea. So that's what life does sometimes.
Okay. All right.
But then this time of year, there's also the K-cups for the pumpkin spice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gotta have pumpkin spice.
Coffee that apparently my wife has been begging for more of. I have to go get some more.
You know what they say, happy wife.
We went through two cases.
Happy wife, happy life. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Always remember that. You know, if anyone says, like, that's sexist, that's statistics. Okay.
It's facts.
You've got facts saying that, like,
that's fact.
Your chances of divorce goes completely down if your wife is happier than you. All right. So, anyways, let's see. Future Twitch mod, Ebica Bro. My ritual is going to Casey's, grabbing a 52-ounce no ice, fill it to the top, and slam it in my car as I stare at people skating by with 10 and on 5 and a pack of Luckies, which I'm assuming he means Lucky Strikes. That's awful. That's disgusting.
This is the worst. I hate you.
I can't believe you would do that at all. It's just really crazy.
Yeah, that's awful. Yeah, yeah. Ryan Holmes says your habit is disgusting. Luckies, that's what he's mad about. Yeah. All right, so today's episode, we're going to back on to the media that have shaped us, shaped our opinions, shape how we view the world. Basically, you know, the piece of us that helps, you know, in our background, what's in the back of our heads, what are we talking about? I think one thing we did not do this episode was discuss who wanted to go first this time around. So I think, have we all gone first before, right?
Yes, I went last, first ones.
Yeah. I still like doing the me in the middle just because you guys are a little close to each other on content, and this kind of breaks it up.
Good old Reinhold, this guy here, this guy. Like, oh, you guys are close to each other. Well, fine, fine. Screw it.
Did it make sense? I think it flows better.
Does it? Does it?
Yeah. Unless you want somebody just to listen to my bit and then sleep through the rest of the 40 minutes.
Rude.
Oh, wow. Wow.
But he's right, Harry. He's right, Harry. He needs a bath. We need a bathroom break in the middle of the episode.
What? No.
For Reinhold, obviously.
Okay. That's fine. Oh, snaps. That's right. I'll be right back.
You got to book in the bad content with some good content so the people will watch the whole thing. If you leave the bad content hanging off the back end or up in the front, you lose viewers that way.
Well, don't bad content break bad fourth wall. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Let's not do that then. Anyway, so moving into my topic. So media that helped shaped me growing up is my third or is it my fourth foray into the Gundam universe. Going into the Gundam universe is entry 0080 War in My Pocket. This is a very small this is based off a very small manga series. I was about to say manga. I was gonna just yeah, there we go. There it goes. That's the disrespect I wanted. Small manga series. Inside the Universal Century. So last week to Gundam Wing, which is its own alternate timeline, different universe. So we're going back to Universal Century. So this was with 8th Mobile Suit Gundam and all the other UC stuff that I talked about. So in the exact same time, Universal Century 0080, so right in the beginning of the war, you've had this little small segment, which Gundam, what it likes to do is to give different facets and things that are going on that with the war. And this one is told from the eyes of the kids and basically the general public. And it does open up with Zeon and the Earth Federation's fighting it out on Earth, trying to get a shipment out, which is, you have no idea where they're going, you don't have no idea what they're shipping, right? But you do see, but you get some, you get people fighting it out and dying and thinking about what's going on. And then you open up to the episode and we introduce to the protagonist of this, Zovie, and you get to the they get to see the whole show through this eyes of a kid, of what's going on. And of course, kids, when they see mobile suits or anything big at that age, especially young boys at fifth grade, sixth grade ish, they're in technically primary school, but not like all the way through junior high ish. Big machineries, so just got off dinosaurs basically. So like, look at big machineries, and of course to the war effort, which the war hasn't touched their spot inside the world. The war is romanticized. The war is cool to them. They're looking at the mobile suits, which to them are jets and tanks on either side, their colony really hasn't picked a side in the war. So they're looking at tanks and romanticizing both sides of it and getting word back and doing different things. It's and all these kids see this war as just something distant. And as they build and set that up, you get to the following episodes, and that as that war comes knocking on their own door, on their doorstep. They're in school one day after arguing, like the one side didn't have a good mech, the other ones had the better ones, and lo and behold, a new model mech pops out, and they end up fighting it. And this Earth Federation, the Zeon forces end up fighting right there in front of the school. So everybody is running to get to shelter and running away, but they're kids. This fight's going on. These amazing mechs are popping out, so the kids basically run to the action. They want to see what's going on, and this is how we're more introduced to more characters. So the fight happens, the Zaku gets damaged, and so it is the Earth Federation's Gundam gets damaged. the Zaku runs, and everyone runs away. The kids follow the Zaku. They find the Zaku damaged. And it's... And you get introduced to the Zaku pilot. His name is Bernie. Now, oh man, sorry. I watched this today, and I will say this: it messed with me. After all these years, it still messes with me. You meet the Zaku pilot. So the guy and the kid likes infantilizes with because it's a pilot of a mech of things that they were talking about, and he has one, you know. So like helps him hide his mech, and they're going, you know, hanging out with the other people, the Federation people who, you know, so the Zeon forces that are on there, doing spare missions for him, and then they're doing bad stuff there. And then later on the show, you end up meeting the Earth Federation pilot, but you don't know it's the other Earth Federation. Oh, I should put the old spoiler tag.
Already there.
Yep. You meet the other pilot, which you don't know this up until the end of the show, pops up. And it's Alan's the boy, right? The little kid that you're following through the series. It's his next door neighbor that he knew growing up, Chris. It's her, right? But he doesn't know this yet. Nobody knows it. This is his top secret. She was basically on that transport ship that you noticed in episode one and flying to, and they're basically evacuating because they had Gundam on them. So they were basically running with Gundam. So fast forward, so like they're doing missions, then you find out that the Zeon troops are threatening to nuke that colony and nuke it out of the sky. Bernie ends up having second thoughts about it, which you find this out right around the end. So it culminates to like these two like factions basically wanting to battle it out and duke it out after each other, and you basically use these kids basically like home as their battleground. So like to me it's very reminiscent of the stuff like some of the dark tales you hear from World War I, World War II, where yeah, they're fighting and shooting and you're in the United States, you hear about this stuff, but the idea that like, you know, that's someone's backyard they're shooting in, you know, this is, you know, that's someone's like farm that they're, you know, the tanks are rolling through, like someone owns there, someone used to live there or used to do things there. But and that's what this thing was. And you get to the point where the end, where this is like, so I was watching and reviewing it today to remind myself of a lot of things. And I'm like, I watched the first two episodes in the morning. Then I had to go pick up Gunther from school. And I thought I hit pause. Apparently I didn't all the way, or something happened. And I leave, I go pick her up, and I come back, and I come back to the saddest part of the whole anime is at the end. And because it, like I said, it culminates between the Zaku and that Gundam having a rematch, fighting it, because Bernie has never faced anybody with such skill as this Chris person. Well, he has a Gundam, but he didn't know. And they end up fighting, and they end up almost killing each other. The Gundam ends up killing the Zaku pilot, and the Earth Federation is pulling up. And as I was walking into it, you just hear the noise. I heard the noise over the sound buster. It's like, oh no, get that! How's that Zaku pilot? He's hamburger. Okay, so as the pilot's describing the cockpit as they come up, it's just hamburger meat inside there because he just shot up from the Gatling guns. And they show the seat, the blood everywhere. And the kid is just in shock of all this happening around him because because that's his friend that is not, it was in that Zaku, and he's just murdered up as they strive to rescue the Gundam pilot out of the mobile suit. He at that point notices that's his next door neighbor, Chris, because that's, you know, it was a mystery, and he finally figures it out. That's Herb there. And he's just all broken up, and he kind of like passes out, and the Earth Federation troops take him back home. And that's when he uncovers the tape of Bernie, one, admitting to his crimes of everything that he's done, and also giving the boy all the evidence that he all evidence that Alan needs to get the Earth Federation to prevent the colony from beginning a hit with a nuclear attack, if he can get someone to believe him. And the saddest, most touching point is that he talks about that he's, you know, he really doesn't like, he's kind of done with this war, but all he wants to do is fight that pilot one more time, and he has to go do this. And then he talks about how he really and asks Alan, it's like, hey, if I don't make it out of here alive, I really want to see Chris again. If I don't make it out of here, tell Chris I said hi, you know. Which he doesn't know. Look, he died, and he doesn't know that at the time he was battling Chris. And then you fast forward into this, you know, like, and then he leaves, and he sees Chris walking around, and Chris's arm is all busted up from the fight, and she's looking for Bernie, and it's like, hey, I gotta leave soon. I can't find Bernie. If you see him, tell him I said goodbye. So the kid is just like walking with all the struggle, and then he gets to school, right? So this fight happened, right? This war, basically, a small little like battle happened, and their school is destroyed. Completely destroyed. The town's mostly destroyed, and the kid is, and the school is sitting there talking about, this is bad. We will, like, we, of course, we will rebuild. We'll try to get you some, we'll figure out how we got to do classes going forward. And then hoping that the kids of this generation will grow up with peace in their hearts and want, and never make a world that has to have these types of, you know, like, this is like uplifting speech. And the kid just starts bawling and crying, right? Because, like, of every, you know, just really getting to him still. And the kids, because they're just kids, they're all kids, just keep going like, hey, why are you crying? I'm sure there'll be another war soon. Yeah, we get to watch some cool mechs blow up each other. Because to them, that, you know, all they see is like property damage. They didn't really have anything like affect them. They didn't know the pilots, they didn't know anybody that got killed. It was mostly just property damage. So it's just, you know. So that anime was kind of double the weight. Warm my pocket. Now, like I said, it touched me because mostly it's brings into that aspect in a fictional setting, trying to tell the story of what war happens to basically everyone around you, like, and brings a little bit to the other side of, while I enjoy watching these Gundams and mechs fight, if you zoom in, right, to these gigantic battle machines fighting around, this is what it's technically doing to people around it. You know, it is destroying buildings, roads, infrastructure, schools. As it falls, things are blowing up around it. People that you know that are battling this, and people seeing it on TV, these things are happening. So it gives a more, to me, gives that reminder that while these may be fantastic weapons and everything else going on, like, hey, a lot of things that are happening still have consequences. Excuse me. That it's very impactful for me. Like I said, it's completely juxtaposed next to like Gundam Wing, when it's just like, you know, when Trace is like, I, you know, can view battling as beautiful. It's okay. Then you've got this, like the dark side of it, the awful nature of it. And I will bring up more of that also in on the honorable mention episode, with some G Gundam stuff, because honestly, like, G Gundam has a, while it may have just been a crappy Street Fighter clone, it had some great messaging to me.
It's one of those things that when you see war for what it really is, and that taking what is essentially a toy commercial and putting reference around the toy commercial is like, hey, kids are gonna watch this because they want to see what the mechs do and how cool that is. Oh, hey, guess what, kids, you're in the show too. This, those kids saying that they can't wait for the next war, that's you.
That's you. Would you like some trauma with your toys? yeah, that's basically what that was like, would you like some trauma with your toys?
Your thoughts, Reinhold? You're muted.
Of course I am, because I'm a professional.
Mm-hmm. That's how we professional. Work. Professional.
No, well, you were saying a couple of things, but one of them was, you know, he didn't know who the other person was, and I was just immediately thinking about Racer X for some reason.
Yep. Oh yep. Yeah, I get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of that level of mystery.
Mm-hmm. By the way, full disclosure, I didn't understand who Racer X was until I got older. When I was a kid watching it, I was like, I don't know who this Racer X guy. He's really cool.
He's really cool. I don't know why he's like low key helping him the whole time, but right. I don't know.
Looking out for the guy. Yeah.
I don't get that. Yeah. But it was a mystery to them. Like, so like Chris didn't know who was the other pilot, didn't know like how did the Zako keep knowing this information, because it was the little boy feeding information to both sides, even because, you know, like I said, like he was just talking, he was just having fun, and we're like, oh, this happened where? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, so
it kind of, in some sense, he unfortunately became a useful idiot for both sides.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because he was too innocent to know better.
Right.
He's just like, cool. I made a friend who pilots that cool thing, and just start talking to people about stuff.
Yeah, and also deposit a really good piece of the lore also, because when people start where they really give to people that the main contractor, Anaheim Electronics, like all the parts works in the Zaku stuff and the Earth Federation, it's the same, basically the same mobile suits. They run the same operating system. They're basically the same parts. But you don't really get to the culmination that all this about Anaheim Electronics until Gundam Unicorn.
Way later.
And Unicorn and Hathaway too, by the way. So yeah.
That is at what? Was that 40, 50 years after the first season?
Yeah, you got some time. Yeah. Yeah. Just sprinkles. Sprinkles. That's how you get sprinkles. All right. I'm done. I will now
rest your case.
Yeah. Okay. Rest my case.
Yeah. All right. So real quick, how would you guys feel about playing a trailer for a movie?
Oh no!
You want to do that? Okay.
Yeah, you can, as long as you don't get us. Is there music on it? Is there music?
It's just a trailer for the movie. So I guess there's a background of one of the songs from the movie. So I mean, if you would rather not, that's fine. I understand, but I think it's sometimes it's easier to see what you know.
Yeah, just you know,
I'm getting ready to talk about, but no, that's all right. You'll do this.
We got some shout out here. Yeah, thanks for the bits.
Cheering for Gundam. Good job.
Nerd shit.
Yeah.
So, my little spiel starts off talking about the movie Stranger Than Fiction, and then I'm talking about the Will Ferrell movie. That was released in 2006, and not the documentary about pro surfers faking surfing events. It's got the same name, and every time I look for it, that's all I find, because Stranger Than Fiction, for some reason, is not available on any streaming platform.
Huh.
Even though it's one of the best movies ever made.
I'm more interested in the surfer thing than I'm talking
about. It's out there. You can get it, and you can watch it for free. No, but Stranger Than Fiction really is. So if you've ever heard of a concept called Chekhov's gun,
mm-hmm.
right? It basically says in literature that if you put a loaded gun somewhere at the beginning of the play or the story,
mm-hmm.
and you don't use it at some point, then you're unfulfilling the reader. You're not mm-hmm. you're not giving them everything. You're telling them something and then ignoring it, and it's a bad move to go with. So
we've all seen The Last Jedi.
I think the quote is if you introduce a gun in Act One, it has to be fired by the end of Act Three.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there have been, even Chekhov did this where he had a play where he literally did that, even though he told mm-hmm. people not to, because his play was about unfulfilled, you know, expectations mm-hmm. and things like that. So he's making a play on his own thing. And that's where Stranger Than Fiction comes in, because it really does present a literary examination of Chekhov's gun. they introduce a concept really early on. They introduce little pieces earlier on, and they all play a part somehow in the movie, but a lot of times not the way you thought. Yeah. It's like Madison with two N's and a Y, but it's not where you think it is. So the concept behind, and the problem with the movie when it came out, I think, because most people who have actually sat down and watched it without any expectations have genuinely loved the movie. The problem is it stars Will Ferrell, you know, right about the time of, you know, Ron Burgundy and, you know, Talladega Nights, and he's doing all this crazy
wacky character
comedy. Yeah, wacky comedy. You're in your face, very, very upbeat. And in this movie, it's not that. This movie is him being a very stodgy, by the numbers, OCD tax agent, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of his state. So he's very prompt. He's very quiet. He just does his thing. And then this thing happens to him and throws him off kilter and changes his outlook on life, on what his life means, what he wants out of everything, etc. But when we talk about Chekhov's gun, there's a concept introduced early on in the movie that starts the spiral that has to pay off somehow. And it does in a big way, and it's awesome. But that concept is, you know, he's living his life. He's doing his thing. His watch that he has this watch, and it malfunctions on him. So he has to stop it, restart it, and get it set back to time. So he asked the guy next to him at a bus stop to ask what time it was, to set his watch. And then he starts hearing a narrator in his head over the past like day or two, talking about he's brushing his strokes, you know, he's brushing his teeth, this many strokes, he's counting them, he's doing the, you know, basically everything he's doing. And he's looking around like, hello, is anybody, you know, he's trying to figure out what's happening. So he's going through that. And then he goes to the bus stop and the watch thing fails. And the narrator says in his head, but little did he know that this would lead to his imminent death. So he freaks out. He's like, what? Why? You know, he doesn't understand. So he talks to therapist says he's schizophrenic. He says he's not, he finally talks to a literary guy who's played by Dustin Hoffman. And Professor Hilbert is his name in the show. And he tries to figure out, you know, are you in a comedy? Are you in a tragedy? What kind of book are you in? You know, if we're going to go down this path that you're actually in character in a book, which kind of story is it? And that's a kind of a humorous way to go through the different types of stories there are out there. At one point he says, are you in a comedy or a tragedy? He says, does anybody out there dislike you? And he says, Professor Hilbert, I'm a tax agent. Everybody hates me. So they go play with that. And in the meantime, he goes to audit this woman at a bakery. She owns her own bakery. He has to go audit her. She's very anarchist, as you would say. And she didn't pay her tax. She didn't pay all of her taxes. Because he's like, you didn't pay your taxes. She goes, no, I paid all of the taxes I felt I wanted to pay. Says the part where you go and pay for the war, I didn't give you that money, but I gave you all the other money to help feed everything like that. So he has to audit her and figure out how much she owes. And it gets pretty kind of dicey between them, but it also ends up creating a situation where they learn a lot more about each other and start to have a relationship. And it's a very beautiful way it happens. It's not normal. But there's this one guy who's reviewing the movie who keeps saying that one scene where he wins her heart is why he'll never find love, because he expects too much out of it because it was so perfect. It's like, it's ruining me. And I'm trying to, I don't want to give a lot away, but the real story, in my opinion, behind the scenes is not necessarily his search for what's going on. It's you also follow the author who's writing the book, and her, she's got a writer's block because she can't figure out how to kill him. She's got to find a, she's got to find a way, a believable way to kill him. And that's apparently that's what she does, is she writes books every 7 or 8 years or a decade or whatever. And the protagonist always dies in them. And it's her, she's like Professor Hilbert says, he's one of her favorite authors because she is such great. Her stories are so wonderful and beautiful, just beautiful pieces of literature. Right. And so she's trying to figure out how to kill Harold Craig. So she's going to, she's imagining all kinds of things. You see her imagining it and what she's going through to do that and what she's putting herself through to do it. She's like basically withering away and smoking and trying to, you know, standing in the rain, trying to figure it all out. She's, it's, she's all in trying to figure this out. And the book company that's supposed to be, that they're waiting for this book for, you know, 7 or 8 years, sent an assistant to her to get her going again, to get her to, get her writer's block broken. So she's going through that process. The character, Harold Crick, who is the played by Will Ferrell, he's going through his process. Everybody in the movie, the main stars of the movie, right? They're all going through something. And this event ends up changing everybody's lives in some way or another. So it stars Will Ferrell, Emma Thompson, who plays the writer. She's wonderful. I mean, she's just a fantastic actress. Dustin Hoffman is in it. Queen Latifah plays the assistant by the, from the book company. She does a great job in it. And one of the guys, I can't remember his name. And I'll have to look it up. I can't remember who it is, but he's in there as his friend, his tax agent friend. And then the two guys, there's two other tax agents that are in there kind of in the background. They have a couple of speaking parts, and it's the two guys from the Sonic commercials. You know, they sit in the car and talk and stuff like that. It's those two guys. I've seen them in movies before a little bit here and there. They get a little bit parts, and they do a funny little bit in this movie too. So that's kind of the main support, main cast of it. Oh, and sorry, the Maggie Gyllenhaal plays the bakery owner, the anarchist. So those cast of characters, those actors, the writing is impeccable. The direction, the movie, the way it's directed and shot, the cinematography, amazingly good. And the end of that story, I have a hard time thinking about it without crying. It is so powerful the way it ends. And that's pretty much it. It's just, like I said, I don't go into a lot of the details on it, but it is, it really does do a good examination of what is a life, what is life worth, you know, that sort of thing. And, are you really living yours and what you should be doing to really live yours before it's too late to, you know, some people don't get a push until they hear the news. You're going to die right in like 2 weeks or whatever. That pushes people to do things. And if you would just embrace that now and move forward with that, then you might find your life getting a little different, more like what you imagined it would be and not what it is. So wonderful movie. That's about all I have to say about it though. Let's
Is that concept why you chose it?
That's part of the reason why I chose it. Yeah. And it's really more about, so if you've ever studied literature, this movie really just folds in on itself several times and re-examines the whole concept of literature to begin with. I think it does a really great job of that. Some people call it a nihilistic view of the world. And some people say it's more of a understanding, you know, the value of life type of thing. But I also think it's a really interesting play of a writer playing on all the literature that they've read and went through in a way that kind of subverts a lot of expectations and changes the paradigm of what a story can and can't be. Now, I may be overselling it at this point, but that's just my opinion of it. I think it's always meant a lot to me when I've seen this movie, and that's part of the reason why. Yeah.
But there's no reason to apologize for the music for any of that.
Yeah. And the music in it is awesome too. And it's, it just really hits the right notes. So, I mean, in the soundtrack, I've got the soundtrack, I've got the movie. So I watch it anytime I want to, obviously. So, I do recommend if you can ever find it on streaming anywhere to go watch it. Otherwise, there's other ways to find the movie that we may know about. But but it's a really great movie, and it really deserves to be praised a lot more than it is, because it was, like I said, it bombed at the box office because it was Will Ferrell and he was doing a serious like role. I mean, there was comedy in it and he does some fun stuff and there's some funny lines, but it's not a comedy, not a broad comedy like he's used to being. Yeah, and that's what everybody was expecting, and they all got bored and didn't understand it and left halfway through. And if you leave halfway through the movie, you don't get it. I mean, the story is the end of this movie, and that's what you're leading up to.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add, Harry?
No. I think that's it. I think someone told me about this movie, but it wasn't on my radar when this thing came out. But it sounds very interesting. Like, you know, definitely have to give that thing a watch, but if I can find it.
Fair enough.
I think you can find it somewhere.
All right. Well, I'm going to go right into talking about it. I'm going to use the shortened version of this title, so I don't have to say the whole thing the whole time. So I'm just going to call it Bunny Girl Senpai.
No, the whole thing. Every time.
Absolutely not.
The whole thing.
So for it, there's a lot
of... You got to say it at least once, right at the beginning. So when I write docs for work, we have companies and they have the whole company name, and we always say the company name, and then in parentheses, the short tag we're going to call it the rest of the document, and then we go there. So you need to do the beginning.
So I'm talking about Rascal Doesn't Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai, and the movie that finishes basically the arc of the 13-episode season, which is Rascal Doesn't Dream of Dreaming Girl. One of the main narrative crux of the entire show is the concept that they created or used, what that they call puberty syndrome, in which your mental health and your mental and emotional health can manifest physically on your person. So the first example we really get of it is the main character, Sakuta, his younger sister. Kaede is minding her own business when she starts getting cyberbullied from kids at school because she wasn't there and wasn't interacting with them. So they started bullying her and telling her that she needs to go die and kill herself. And she walks into his room and then just cuts start appearing on her. And she starts bleeding and collapses. And then it just manifests physically on her person. Sakuta himself, during this event, gets three massive like claw marks, like a giant bear mark across his chest, that he doesn't know where it came from and he doesn't understand it.
Do I need a content warning banner for you?
No.
All right. Okay, just wondering, continue, sorry.
Right. But because he's a middle schooler, everybody doesn't, they don't believe that it just manifested itself. So he ends up in a low point in which he, as a middle schooler, goes to this beach, and this high school girl comes up to him and starts talking to him and tells him that she believes him and starts helping him work through it mentally, helping him work through the fact that people aren't believing him, and that for you, it's better for you to be a better person every day than it is to suffer and be resentful for people who don't pay attention to you. It's better to be kind than it is to resent others. So the concept of puberty syndrome is the main crux of all of the arcs because it manifests in different ways. So in the first episode, you end up getting introduced to the titular Bunny Girl Senpai, named Mai. And you meet her with Sakuta in the library. He's just reading a book. And this girl walks by in like a Playgirl bunny outfit. Like a Playboy bunny outfit with the leotard and the high heels and the cufflinks and the bunny ears. And nobody's paying attention to her at all, except for him. Sakuta's the only one that can see her in this entire library. And he's like, hey, senpai, I know you go to my school, and why are you dressed like this? And she's like, well, it's better. This is my warnings, is don't be near me and you'll be fine. And her puberty syndrome is that people are forgetting that she exists because she was a childhood idol. Like, she started on a TV drama at the age of 6. And then when she was getting into high school, she had a falling out with her mom, who was her agent. And she decided that she didn't want to be in the industry anymore because her mom pushed her to do something she wasn't comfortable with. And she decided, screw that, I'm on a hiatus and I just want to forget about it. So people started forgetting that she existed. And the first arc, which is the first 3 episodes, is about Sakuta helping Mai get through her spout of puberty syndrome. And the first arc, the first 3 episodes, the ending of the 3rd episode has an emotional core that some other shows don't reach in a full season. When you're watching a character basically putting his own health on the line to make sure this person that he cares about doesn't go away. Because at a point, he discovers that if he goes to sleep, she doesn't exist anymore. So he ends up staying up for days, drinking energy drinks while still trying to focus on doing exams. And what her watching him go through this and her feeling terrible that this guy who she barely knows is putting his everything into helping her. And it just kind of plays to who Sakuta as a main character is. One of his friends really describes him in a very solid way, which was, the best part about you is that you aren't afraid to say thank you, I'm sorry, and help me. Somebody who understands who he is and is willing to get what he needs from other people. And the series goes through a lot of different characters dealing with different emotional aspects of themselves and how it affects them on a physical level. Like, one girl has anxiety that about a decision that she makes, so she keeps repeating the same day over and over again. And only Sakuta and her know that it's repeating because they bumped into each other on one of the earlier episodes and it caused a connection. And like, somebody has like an identity crisis on who they are as a person because they matured faster than their body matured faster than the other girls. So she doesn't like her own body, and is very intelligent, but feels like her intelligence gets ignored because of how fast she physically grew up. And it touches on a lot of emotional issues while also having solid humor in dialogue. The way the dialogue is written for characters like Sakuta, who his whole personality is that he really doesn't care what other people think because he doesn't really understand how to read the room properly. So a good example is that he's flirting with Mai and she like grabs his arm and she goes, I bet you're thinking some really lewd thoughts right now. And he goes, probably 100 times more lewd than you can imagine. And she immediately pushes him away. He's like, what the fuck? And that kind of, that all the characters really flow into each other when they're talking about things. And the dialogue in particular is one of the things that actually inspired my own kind of writing when I write how characters talk to each other, because it's very natural dialogue where even though they're talking about a subject, there are points where they just randomly tangent off in the middle of talking about stuff. Like his friend, the science girl, they're discussing this whole thing of Mai disappearing. and she's making coffee using a Bunsen burner and beakers. And they're talking about it. She pours him the coffee, goes, here's your coffee and here's the sugar. And it's this vial that just has all the scientific information about sugar on the outside. And in the middle of a conversation, she's like, are you sure this is sugar? She goes, I mean, it was white when I put it in, so I think so. Anyway. And they just kept talking like nothing happened. And it's one of those kind of it's the dialogue that they easily weave serious and playful with one another. And that affected my own personal writing as well, without losing the emotional core of these characters dealing with very serious issues that some things aren't, they don't address, some other medias don't address very well, or they ignore it, or they don't use it to its full extent. And with the fact that you're set a mystery early on, because they don't explain what happens, where his scar comes from, like immediately. They don't explain it. You have to wait and see how they reveal it or where it comes from. And while when it does eventually get revealed, it's a very satisfactory reveal that is that hits very emotionally powerful. For me, I rewatched it yesterday, and there's a point about past halfway through the season where an episode starts, and because I've rewatched it, my perception of that scene is completely different. So I immediately started tearing up instead of feeling the appropriate joyful moment that it's supposed to be giving me, because I know what's going to happen. I know how this affects how this affects the plot as it further goes on. And watching these characters become closer together while dealing with their own mental issues and working together in a manner that weaves all their lives together in this tight-knit group of friends that is very impressive to make all the characters that do appear have a personality and a reason to be there, and that they are interesting when they are on screen. Like, even some characters that you get less screen time, like Sakura's best friend, he's like a basketball player, and he's really good at playing basketball. And one of his jokes is that his girlfriend hates Sakura because he's a loner. He's like an outcast, and she hates him. But every time she tries to confront him, his best friend just kind of ignores her and continues hanging out with him. But there's a moment where Sakta is helping one of their friends out, and it's like 2 a.m, and he calls his best friend and goes, hey, they're in trouble, meet me here. And he's there before they even reach there. He bikes there, and he's like, oh, you told me to, he's like, oh, you got here faster than I thought. And he's like, well, you told me to fly here, and all I could do was bike, so I did the best I could. So it, for me, it's the emotional core of the show is very powerful and very well written and well done. All the characters have a solid personality that is very distinctly their own, and it helped me personally with writing. And even though this is one of the more newer things I've watched, because this only came out in 2018, it caused me to have like a massive influence to the point where I still think about it. There's a reason I named the series after the show, because it's constantly one of those things that sit there in my brain. I will say that one of the things that certain people that I know, Nostalgia, will not enjoy is the fact that the main character, Sakta, realizes this is supernatural. He's like, this is a supernatural thing that's happening. I don't understand it. So he goes to his science friend, Futaba, the girl, and she explains it as best she can scientifically. So the whole concept of Mai disappearing, they use the concept of Schrodinger's cat, where she doesn't exist if she's not observed. So the only people who know her and can see her means that she exists. And when there's nobody to know which ways, she's basically in a state of constant limbo, where she exists to some people, but not to others. And they use a lot of, like, it definitely feels kind of shoehorned in or tangentially connected. Like the concept that the reason that Sokka repeats time with the other girl is because when they interacted with each other, it caused quantum entanglement. So that's why, like, when it happens to her, it happens to him, since they're entangled. So while the scientific stuff might not be exactly accurate, I get where they're coming from. It kind of makes it, because you have a character that doesn't believe in the supernatural aspect of it. She doesn't believe that it's supernatural, so she has to come up with a reason why it exists. So, and using scientific concepts to explain supernatural, a supernatural instance makes it easier for them to understand how to deal with it, even if it isn't exactly accurate.
Was it like that, you know, because no one really goes to shows unless they're trying to, you know, be 100% accurate, other than Reinhold.
Oh, the Scouger would care. We, as I said, some people we know, a Scouger would hate the fact that they kind of use it as a narrative point instead of it being like 100% accurate. But I'm also not a quantum scientist. I don't know quantum mechanics, so I can't confirm nor deny that they use it properly or not.
I mean, I'm going to be talking about the upcoming episodes, science fiction writing, and that's going to involve hard science. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of that, hard science fiction. And that's really got to be scientifically correct. It's right. Very stickler. So,
which I totally understand, but definitely this is more of leaning towards the supernatural and somebody using science to explain the supernatural. Like, that's kind of why I wanted to kind of bring it up when we're talking to Rimzo on the when we're talking about it, because the whole concept of they use science as a way to explain the supernatural in some way, shape, or form.
Well, I did that a little bit during that conversation, right? Too. I was trying to go into that.
Exactly. So while it might not be the most accurate use of it, I'm not a theoretical physicist, so I can't confirm nor deny that things that they said when they start talking about, you know, superpositions in the universe and shit like that. I was like, cool. I see what you're coming from. I don't know if that works that way, but
a lot of literature too is you just suspend belief and just go with what's being told to you and the narrative is being driven to you, because, you know, if you're too critical of it that way, you're going to end up ruining just about any piece of literature.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much.
But like I was talking about Stranger in Fiction, where's the science behind a person being in a plot, you know, in a book and being up and walking around and stuff? It's
right.
You have to kind of suspend that disbelief.
Mm-hmm. Even when they are talking science. Yeah. But I will just put it out there. It's on both. Last time I checked, it's on both Netflix and Hulu. But the season is the movie. You'll have to find your own way of watching the movie. I don't know if it got an official Western release or not. But when you do watch it, I do highly recommend you watch the movie, because the movie really brings the entire 13 episodes together. It feels like it's the culmination of everything the 13 episodes built to. Mm-hmm. And
like Firefly.
Yeah.
Serenity. Okay.
Yeah. But it's definitely a very, very interesting watch. If any of it interests you, I would suggest giving it a watch. The comedy, the dialogue's great. The comedy can be kind of ridiculous. I mean, I've never seen any other show where the main character owns an asshole by loudly exclaiming that he's a virgin. So there's that. Mm-hmm. Because the guy was spreading rumors that this girl was a whore and sleeping with him. And wow. And he's like, I'm a virgin, get fucked.
On my level.
Exactly.
All right. So Yeah, is the reason why you picked this is because, you know, it did help influence your writing style, or is
it, it influenced my writing, the way the dialogue interacts, but also the fact that it's just kind of, it's one of those shows that after I watch it had always been just kind of in the back of my mind. It's one of the ones that lingered that I hadn't rewatched it for like a year, and then but still was constantly there, just in the back of my head. I was just constantly thinking about it, like. After I watched it, there was like a solid like 3 months where every time I saw a Scourge, I was like, I should rewatch Bunny Girl Senpai. I should just rewatch it. I thought it was really good. I should just rewatch it. And which I'm glad I did, and it still got me to cry because, of course, it did.
It's like, because, I'm not doing anything. I'll just watch some Bunny Girl Senpai.
Right? It's like, and it got me to cry because you get invested in the way these characters are and the fact that the characters... There's a bunch of things that really show you who the characters are. It's like Sokka is talking to another person. Is like the three phrases I always want to hear from another person is thank you, you did your best, and I love you. And like that, the, and for him, those are like the three things you always want to hear from somebody that you care about, be it a parent or a sibling or a loved one. And it kind of just show, like, again, it just kind of shows you the that he's all about being kinder to the next person. And that's why he's able, that's why he's willing to kind of go out on a limb for all these people he like just met. Like, he met Mai when she's just randomly walking around the library, and he just goes all in to help her because he's also going through the syndrome. And he also knows his sister was going through it. And so, yeah.
You know, Reinhold, you could put it, avatar image, so when you turn your camera off, it, you know, it gives you something neat to
stare. You're muted again.
See, you can do like this, which is really
I can neat. I'm going to do that. I just hadn't got around to it yet because, you know, professional.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's fine.
Well, what are your thoughts, Reinhold?
I don't know. It's anything that can make you emotional. Reach into your, I mean, that's the whole point, in my opinion, of literature and entertainment like this, that it has to affect you in some way, emotionally, like to make you think about things a certain way or a new way that you hadn't thought of before, or pull an emotion out of you that you weren't expecting the need to have felt at that time, you know, and it, especially if it hits at the right time, at the right place. Like, I don't want to get into too much of an example, but there was this one time where I was watching this movie and it just hit me because of the situation I was going through was almost identical to what was happening in this movie. And it just really floored me for that reason. And, you know, there's things like that. I mean, that's my opinion, the height of literature.
Trust me, Reinhold, there's a reason why your line April's on the list. And when we get into it, there's a reason it has to be when Harry's talking about something more positive and light, because it's going to get real dark, real fast, both for me emotionally, because I watched it at the time I'd watched it and what it's about. We're going to get there. Trust me, when you just talked about, put a pin in it, we'll get there. Yeah, it's one of those.
And soon to be former moderator, Esquadra Plus says, at the rate we're going, it'll be April before we're covered. Ha ha.
Well, I'll have you know, we did it two times in a row. Thank you.
As one gets promoted, the other must be demoted, right?
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Notice I don't have a cog next to my name in the channels.
Exactly.
So, what do you guys want to talk about next time we do this?
Well, for me, I think I'm going to go since. I did two Gundams. That means I'm going to leave the world of Gundam and go to the land of samurai. Let's do Rurouni Kenshin.
Okay.
Yeah.
Reinhold?
I'm trying to pull it up now so I can see what was on my list here.
It's going to go like Kids and Hogs season 4.
Kids in the Hall again.
Maybe we'll do the four left, and they're all interesting in their own right, but they're also going to be mm-hmm. kind of, one of them's going to be real quick, like this one. It's another movie. It's called Ellie's Story. So I'll probably mm-hmm. just do that one for now. And then City Lights is another movie that I want to do. So just do a string of movies for now.
So you're going to do LA Night, LA Story?
LA Story. Ellie Story. Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'll save Charlie Chaplin City Lights, which, spoiler alert, I feel is the most romantic movie ever made. I will save that for near the end.
So, Reinhold, I think Discord makes your mic terrible because as soon as you turn the Discord on, your mic went all wonky.
I wonder if it is Discord is still in it. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
Well, Harry, I think it's time for me to talk about O Run High School Host Club.
kiss falling.
That's what I will talk about next time is O Run High School Host Club.
Yeah.
Lighthearted.
Yeah, very lighthearted.
You know, one of the few lighthearted things on my list.
I've got Rurouni Kenshin. That's lighthearted. Yeah. But it's only lighthearted so they can just wrench it from you.
It's lighthearted until it isn't.
Until it isn't. Yeah.
And that leaves the last three. One is waiting on you. One is waiting. I need to make sure Ascalgia has a weekend open.
I'm going to do Initial D last. I'll tell you that much.
That last show is going to be miserable. That last show is going to be miserable.
I can say that the LA Story is a comedy. Mm-hmm. It's an upbeat comedy. So if you wanted something light to counteract what you're talking about, we can do that then. I can time it with you.
Trust me, the reason why that one I'm waiting for Harry to do Initial D is because all of Gundam is sad and Rurouni Kenshin will be sad. The only thing that isn't like emotionally damaging is Initial D because it's cars racing cars.
There's emotion.
Yes, I know there is, but nowhere near as much as the other ones. You can't tell me that you.
Stage 2 when the AE86 engine blows.
Right here. God damn it. God, here.
Versus
God,
those Evos.
Yeah, Gearhead would probably cry at that, right?
Uh huh. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Or how about when Keske? Okay.
We'll get into it. But yeah, I have one that's waiting on Harry. I have to make sure a scout is open for a weekend to talk about Future Diary because that one's trash. Man, it's so trash. It's gonna be so great to watch with somebody else. Trash. And the last one's the most recent thing, and that's also just the manga. And that's gonna talk about the spiral that it caused.
Yeah. All right. So the next order of business. When do we do our next 6-hour show? Or sorry, not six, four. 4-hour show.
Oof. True.
So, me personally, November 24th, which is Black Friday, I do like because, you know, I'll be off. Easy for me.
I have genuinely no idea what my work schedule is until 3 weeks beforehand. So,
but it's Friday night.
It's Thanksgiving.
It's the day after Thanksgiving.
My job is open 365. 365. If we literally aren't
even like Christmas and shit.
Yep.
But it'd be Friday night though.
I mean, that doesn't mean anything. It's open 365, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So once I know what that schedule is by that time, I can tell you. I could probably tell you what my schedule is up to the first week of November, starting tomorrow.
Well, we need to put a date so people can know that they need to tune in for that Friday. We have hundreds of people.
Conditional date, and then if we change it, we can let people know.
All right. Reinhold, do you like Black Friday?
I like Black Friday in the fact that I get the sleep in and kind of let my body recover from all of the food I ate the day before. Mm-hmm. Because, oh my God, that's what the whole holiday's for, right?
Yeah.
For eating way too much food and I already eat way too much food to begin with. So when I eat way too much food, that's a lot of food.
Yeah, it's the American holidays.
It's yes, so Black Friday is great. You get to sleep, yep, kind of sleep in. You have your turkey sandwiches that you have from leftover turkey with the mayonnaise. Mm-hmm. It's the best day, right?
Oh, by the way, Scott, we already talked about this. I told you this. It's trash, and I told you that you're gonna come over to my house and we're gonna watch this trash together and laugh at how trash it is. That's fair. I agree with him. You should watch Over the Garden Wall. It is very short cartoon, very Halloween spirit.
W-A-L or W-A-L-L?
W-A-L-L. Yeah.
All right, so I'm gonna end this episode before it gets too long in the tooth. Thank you everyone who was tuning in watching this. Actually put us out on the face too, so thank you. If you watch this along, you would listen to anything else in the world, but you decided to listen to us, and that I thank you. Thanks for having a good note. We see you guys next Monday, and tune in for November the 25th for our 4-hour Walnut special, which that Friday night show needs it. So I'm going to go off and try to pull some more of the Wall Network people in there. I am going to try to pull, I'm actually going to try to see if I can pull Miranda. It's going to, you know, she might need a microphone. So I might send her over down to Vincent's house to hang out.
God damn it.
Just hang out with him.
Yeah, just go over there. It'll be fine.
No, I'll probably have her come over here because I've got a 2-mic set up, and I'll be drinking there, so I actually can party with somebody.
Yeah, somebody also drink.
I know, but she'll probably So we'll sit here. I'll move the mics. I'm a bit at the Kotatsu getting drunk, watching guys like
smashed.
I know.
4-hour stream turns into a 12-hour stream. Doesn't even realize it.
I know. Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye. Say goodbye, Reinhold.
Bye, Reinhold.